Let's pretend somebody just got engaged. Beautiful, you have this beautiful ring right now, and now you have to plan your wedding. What would be the first step? Where do you start?
The first thing I would say is, once you get engaged, to take a beat, to pause. People always want to move into action. It's very common to be super exciting and like want to post on social media, want to, you know, start telling people and inviting people. I always say, take a beat, pause, and enjoy the moment, right? Like, make sure you are able to process what's happening and don't dive in right away. Give yourself like a week at least of just enjoying. But once you've kind of calmed down and been able to process, I would say the first thing to do is to have a conversation with your partner.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bougie Best Friend Podcast. I'm your host, Coco, and welcome to the Bougie Bestie community. First, I want to say that if you have not joined yet, you got to join my broadcasting channel on Instagram, where I host weekly giveaways and I share kind of like the behind the scenes and I tell you about a new upcoming podcast episode. And it's just kind of like a more private conversation with all my bougie besties. In today's episode, we're going to talk all things wedding planning. Growing up, I'm sure most of us have dreamed of having this huge, beautiful wedding. But as you get older, you see that sometimes you might even not need that. So in today's episode, I interviewed Kelly Khalil. She's the founder of Loverly. Loverly is a leading digital wedding planning platform offering a wide range of tools, expert advice, and diverse content to guide couples through their wedding planning journey. It's like a DIY wedding planning platform. Kelly definitely knows a thing or two about weddings. So in today's episode, I asked her a lot of questions and how to have some like uncomfortable conversations when you might not agree with your partner about certain things, or if you're at a wedding party and you're dealing with a bridezilla, or maybe you are the bridezilla. I love this episode for anybody who is just curious about weddings. Maybe you're engaged, maybe you're planning a wedding, or maybe you just want to hear about that big day whenever it does come. Before we get into it, I would kindly ask you, as always, to leave a 5-star rating and review if you're enjoying the podcast. It helps show more than you can possibly imagine. I love reading your reviews, and I'm going to read one that I recently got from Catalina Londono. She's from Colombia, and she said, I love the energy of this podcast. So bougie. Coco is amazing. It's the ideal podcast. You can learn about a lot of things if you want to improve your life, such as networking, feminine side, and high maintenance. Yes, dear Catalina, I'm trying to provide value in every aspect of your life. So that's why we covered weddings, because a lot of my content, as you guys know, is about dating. And then one day you got to plan a wedding. So I'm like, I need to have somebody on who can help us. So without further ado, I don't know why I say that in every episode. Without further ado, I just think it sounds like, you know, like an actual podcaster. And make sure to send this episode to all of your friends who might benefit from it. Somebody who got engaged, somebody who's planning their wedding. Thank you very much for listening. Rocky, stop whining.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kelly, welcome to Bougie Best Friend Podcast.
Coco, what's up, girl?
What's up? I am so excited to chat with you. You are my go-to wedding guru, and I was just at a wedding a little bit ago, and I feel like I have so many more questions now for you, more than I prepared.
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, I have a tremendous amount of wedding knowledge, and I'm happy to share it. So hopefully it can help anyone who's thinking about getting engaged, currently planning. Happy to dive into all things wedding.
Okay, let me start with you and your background. You are the founder of Loverly, a DIY wedding planning platform. Tell me, where did the idea come from? A little bit about you. Is that something you always were interested in?
Yeah, so I started Loverly a little over 10 years ago. My background is I studied entrepreneurship, grew up in LA, went to USC, fight on. So born and raised in Southern California. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to start a business, but wasn't quite sure what that business would be. I grew up in a house where both my parents were entrepreneurs, so it was in my DNA. I started my career, completely unrelated industry, in finance, and I did that for 3.5 years, made a bunch of money, but as a lot of people who are recovering finance
people.
Yeah. Like, you know, you get to the point where the money you're making does not line up with like the stress or the unhappiness factor. You just grind. You're working like 80, 90 hour weeks. Right. So anyways, I kind of left that, took some time, figured out what I wanted to do. And my sister was running a PR firm, a lifestyle PR firm in LA. And one of her biggest categories that she worked on was weddings. So she worked with basically like the Kardashians event planner, you know, celebrity dress designers, photographers, venues. And so she was helping them to build their brand online, digitally, social was new. So this is when PR was still like TV and print, and then social media was becoming a thing, right? And so I decided to work with her, and we were working together for a couple months, and then she got engaged. And so, you know, when a wedding publicist gets engaged, it's a next level type of wedding. So she had the ultimate Rolodex of people to tap into. But, you know, 10 plus years ago, Pinterest was barely a thing. There was no Instagram. And I found myself just doing a bunch of research. And, you know, we were still tearing things out of magazines, putting together binders. I mean, it literally sounds like the dark ages of wedding planning when I describe it. But really, the idea for Loverly came from, wouldn't it be great if there was one place you can go to get ideas, inspiration, advice, find vendors, and in a way that I wanted to be like modern, right? I felt like the publications that were out there didn't really speak to millennial consumers, now millennial and Gen Z. And so that was really the vision for Loverly, was to make wedding planning easier and more fun. Here we are, gosh, almost 10 years later. We've helped thousands of couples down the aisle. We have a couple hundred people signing up almost every day. We offer free wedding planning tools, everything from a wedding checklist to a guest list manager. That means collecting mailing addresses, managing RSVPs, et cetera, et cetera. Helping you find your vendors. So we offer that full suite of tools for really, I would say, the DIY person, but also the person that's like digitally focused. So if you just want to have a simple tool that brings it all together for you, that's what we do. Totally free. Create an account at loverly.com. It's been a journey, but it's very rewarding when you hear couples say like, oh my gosh, your tool like saved my life. It was so easy. It was great. Because people get overwhelmed with wedding planning. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of spend. And so, yeah, we just want to make it easy and fun.
Okay. A million questions in my mind. This is how I want to do this conversation. Let's pretend somebody just got engaged. Beautiful. You have this beautiful ring right now, and now you have to plan your wedding. What would be the first step? Where do you start?
The first thing I would say is, once you get engaged, to take a beat, to pause. People always want to move into action. It's very common to be super exciting and like want to post on social media, want to, you know, start telling people and inviting people. And I always say, take a beat, pause, and enjoy the moment, right? Like, make sure that you are able to process what's happening, and don't dive in right away. Give yourself like a week at least of just enjoying. But once you've kind of calmed down and been able to process, I would say the first thing to do is to have a conversation with your partner. And the conversation is going to be something like this. What do you envision for this wedding? What is on your mind? You need to align on what you both want for your wedding day. That means where you want to get married. What is the vibe of the wedding? What is the scale of it? Is it small and intimate? Is it a destination? Is it a big blowout party with all your family and friends? Then you need to talk a little bit about budget. How much do we want to spend? Who is contributing? Are you both paying for it? Do you have family that's contributing? How do you want to pay for it? Having the money conversation, very, very important. And I actually have a number of videos and articles on this, because money when it comes to weddings can be a very, very touchy subject, probably one of the most heated and mm-hmm. overwhelming. And then the third thing you want to talk about is who you're going to invite, because the guest list itself is going to really impact the budget, how much you need to spend, and where you can have the wedding. So I've had a bride-to-be on my podcast where she went and booked a venue that she loved and she was so excited about. She was so eager to lock in the wedding venue. It was the perfect location, vibe, the entire thing. And then once it was signed and she had paid the deposit, her and her fiance started working through their guest list. And turns out,
big mistake.
The venue only fits like 120 and their guest list is double that. So she's having a major crisis, right? Either change the venue or cut the list. So,
and how much is usually the deposit? Is it 50%?
I mean, it depends venue to venue, but you're going to put something sizable down. It could be anywhere from 25% to 50%. So be prepared once you find the venue to write a check. Because if you want to lock in your venue, you're going to sign a contract and you're going to put a deposit down. And you need to read that contract because it is a legal agreement. And they're not like overwhelming and crazy and super scary. But you should read through it line by line and understand it and make sure the wedding date is correct. You and your partner's names are correct. The payment schedule you're cool with and it works for you. Yeah, you just want to make sure that you're comfortable with the contract, you're comfortable with the agreement. It's not a small amount you're committing. And I would say that the venue probably is the agreement that you want to fully understand, because some things that may be in the agreement are things like what vendors you can work with. Some venues have lists that you only can work with their preferred vendors. Yeah. Things you need to know. What time are you allowed to go till? Right? Like some venues, if like, I think Malibu, California is a really good example. That whole town of Malibu, they have like a noise ordinance where by 10 p.m., everything needs to be shut down. So there's no music after 10 p.m. The police come and the venue coordinator will shut down the party because they don't want to lose their license. Right?
So Croatian people should not go there because our weddings are usually till like 5 a.m.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I'm not a huge fan of, but go ahead.
Yeah. If you're trying to rage, you want to make sure that the venue accommodates that. Other things too, to think about are load in and load out time. So yeah, you might have the Saturday wedding, but they might have a wedding on Friday, right? Mm-hmm. So like making sure you know how much time you have to load in your flowers, your decor, your rentals. And sometimes if you are doing an elaborate over-the-top design, you might need to buy out the day before. So there's all of these things that you need to like understand and talk through when it comes to the venue. One more thing I would also flag is some venues have very, very strict rules on what you can hang on the walls and what you can put up.
What about getting married in like somebody's backyard or renting a house? Does that save you money?
So that is a really common myth that happens when someone's planning a wedding. Because the wedding venue is, I would say, the single largest line item on your wedding budget, right? You think, oh, I'll just get married at my parents' house or, you know, my friend's house or whatever it is. The problem with that is unless that house, that home, that venue is set up to do events, you have to bring everything in. So at first you feel like, oh, I'm saving money on the venue fee, but then you have to bring in bathrooms for 200 people.
And tell me an example. How would that even work?
Well, you're not trying to bring in like a porta potty, but think about like a movie trailer. Like when you're on set of a movie, they have really nice, almost like little trailers that look like they have like marble floors and they're actually nice bath, but they cost like $3,000 to rent them. Right. So that's probably for two toilets or two, you know, little bathrooms. So You're bringing in bathrooms. You're bringing in all the catering. You're bringing in all the rentals. You're bringing in power sometimes, like a generator, because sometimes these homes are not equipped to handle a DJ, a band's kind of AV setup, the lights, all of that, right? So it's not that your wedding will be cheaper. You'll just be allocating that money differently. And it could be more stressful because there's going to be things that you don't know that you don't know, right? And so I would say if you're doing a full-scale wedding production at a home, you're going to want a planner who knows, you know, logistically what you would need to pull that off. So it's not always cheaper to go that full DIY route. It oftentimes can be more expensive and more time, more logistics, more stress. So there is something nice about a wedding venue that has everything dialed. Oftentimes venues have their own rentals. They have tables, chairs, they have, you know, different bar setups, they have stages. They have a lot of these things figured out. And most importantly, most of them have catering kitchens, which is a huge thing. Because if you're doing something at home, they have to build oftentimes
a
full catering setup in the parking lot, right? And that takes tenting, that takes, you know, grills. So it can be very, very expensive. So you need to weigh the pros and cons and not make that decision lightly. I had my engagement party at my father's house and we had to bring everything in.
You mentioned wedding planners, which is something that we need to dissect. There's a lot of wedding planners out there. When you're hiring somebody for your special day, give me a few questions you should ask them to make sure that you are a good fit.
So before you start talking to wedding planners, you need to ask yourself some questions because there are so many different types of professionals at different price points, different levels of service. So I'm going to break that down first, and then we can talk about interviewing a planner. So you can go from something as simple as a day of coordinator, which is someone you might hire to start helping you 60 days out from the day of the event. So they'll put together your day of timeline. They are there on the day of the wedding and they're coordinating all the logistics of delivery and setup. So while you're getting your hair and makeup done or getting dressed and getting ready, you can be fully focused on your actual wedding and not worried about was the cake delivered, etc. So at a minimum, I would highly recommend getting a day of coordinator. That's kind of the entry point, right? Then you have a full planner, and a planner is someone who you might hire 6 to 9 months out, and they're focused on all of the logistics. So they'll help you find the vendors, sometimes help you find the venue. They'll help you manage your budget. They'll help you figure out like the best mix of vendors that work together. They really take on all the operations and logistics of the day. They will oftentimes remind you of payments due to vendors, contracts that need to be signed. They usually help negotiate a lot of those terms on your behalf, right? So they become the full planner logistics. The next tier up is an event designer and planner. And that's when they actually creatively run point on that. That can be everything from the overall aesthetic, the vibe, the florals. It's a separate design. It's a more expensive offering because they're literally designing the entire thing. And a lot of people don't understand that when they are hiring an event, I hired a wedding planner. They assume they're getting event design with that, but that's not always the case. And so that's really something that you need to like think about. And then the highest tier, that most upper echelon, which, you know, Melissa Andre, she's really big on Instagram. She kind of is one of these planners. She's incredible. She's a creative director. You hire her and it's turnkey. She manages everything. The florals, the all of the details are completely managed under her roof. She has all of her own team. So from start to finish, she's managing everything. So you need to understand yourself, what kind of planner are you? What kind of help do you want? And then start there, right? Okay, I want to be involved. I want to get my hands dirty. I have some budget that I want to allocate So I'm going to just go with a regular planner. I don't need design. I want to kind of take on the design myself, or I want my florist to lead design, right? Mm-hmm. So once you figure that out, that will narrow the scope of what kind of service provider you're looking for. So I think that would be number one when you're going out down that path. And then number two, when you're interviewing planners, it truly is a matter of personality and match. Like your wedding team, you have to get along with. And because you're going to be working with them for an extended period of time on the most, you know, emotionally charged day of your life, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not so much the questions you need to ask. It's honestly, these planners usually have it down to a science on the questions they will ask you in mm-hmm. their screening process. Because it really is a two-way interview to see if you're
fit. They don't want to work with a bridezilla either.
That is correct. And also, like, honestly, I joke about this, but it's a real thing. Like, there is, you know, a pain in the ass fee. I really think there is. When someone finds that, like, oh, they're going to be really difficult, you know, they're like, all right, my prices are going to, I'd rather not, they'd either say no, thank you, or it's not worth
pain in the ass fee. Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of fees, can you give me, and obviously I hate that I always have to give disclaimers, but like, can you give me a ballpark of like, how much can this cost? And yes, different city, different levels and all that. But like the entry,
the
fee,
average
entry level.
We could talk about the average. The average wedding in the US costs anywhere from $29,000 to $32,000. Okay. That is the average. The average guest count is about 120. So take that with a grain of salt, because if you're getting married in New York City, your entry point is probably 80K. That's your entry mm-hmm. point. Luxury weddings are, which this sounds like a lot of money. It's not even luxury at 100,000, which sounds crazy, but 150,000, 200,000 is an entry point. Now, I realize that is a down payment for a house. That is, mm-hmm. you know, that is your student loans. It's a lot of money. And so you really, again, going back to the early conversation with your partner, you need to draw the line in the sand as to what you're willing to pay, because you can have a beautiful event at any budget. And if you only have a $15,000 budget, maybe you're just hosting a beautiful dinner party with mm-hmm. 20 friends and you're wearing a beautiful dress and you have a photographer there. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. there's ways that you can pull off a beautiful wedding at your budget. So don't be discouraged by that. But you know, if you're looking at Instagram and you're seeing those beautiful tents with floral chandeliers, you know, a tent can cost $20,000 just for the tent.
It's not cheap.
Not cheap.
The chandeliers are usually a bit pricey. I want to stay here for a second when it comes to like money conversations, because they are very uncomfortable. So speaking of the conversation with your partner, what if you just don't align on what you want? How would you solve that?
I mean, that's a tough question. Honestly, if you can't get through the money conversation, then you probably shouldn't be planning the wedding.
In fact,
you need to figure out how to align on that. It's really important. I think what ends up being a factor that I will say that comes into play oftentimes is if one of the people in the couple, their parents are contributing, right? So sometimes a parent might allocate, oh, I'm going to gift you $30,000 mm-hmm. towards your wedding or whatever it is, right? That oftentimes can come with its own set of stress and anxiety. So go down this road with me. The father, the mother of the groom, I'm going to help plan. We're going to give you all the dollars, right? Now.
And then it's her wedding, basically.
Exactly. And that's something to consider. Whoever pays has the power. And I had Jove Meyer, who's an incredible Brooklyn-based planner and designer, and he said that, and it stuck with me because it is true. Whoever mm-hmm. is paying is going to control the guest list. They're going to control the design, the aesthetic. And so if
maybe
you are
going to hire their own wedding planner that you
you don't know. And so mm-hmm. It's really important that if you're getting contributions from family, I would suggest they actually give you the money and that you personally sign the contracts and you pay the deposits yourself, because if your future mother-in-law, her name is on the contract, she can call those people and she can redesign your wedding.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Did that ever happen?
I've heard of that multiple times. Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. This is wild. Okay. We're talking about money here a lot, but I think that's like a huge part of that entire day. But can you pinpoint something that people usually just get like super surprised? What kind of like fee is like super surprising?
I think people are surprised at the cost of rentals, things like building out a dance floor. If you want a custom decal on your dance floor, if you want a tent setup or a beautiful light installation, I think people are shocked by those prices because, like I said, they can be very, very hefty. And I think people are surprised by the cost of flowers. You know, when you have a product, right? I'm calling flowers product, but when there's seasonality, when there's labor involved and shipping and all of this stuff, flowers can get very expensive very quickly. And we're in a world where we see so much on Instagram and you see these insanely beautiful installations and people don't realize that's a $50,000 floral budget.
Mm-hmm. One of my friends got married in Dubrovnik, or the way we would say Dubrovnik. Mm-hmm. And it's like higher on some kind of, I don't even know how to describe it in English, but like, it's like you have to climb somewhere and their wedding cliff. Was something like that. And they had a carry fee because people had to carry, you know, chairs and everything. And they were like, that was just so surprising. What about the wedding dress? Do you think people usually like rent or they buy it themselves?
So I think wedding dress rentals are very popular overseas. Like I know I'm half
in Croatia, everybody's like renting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So same. Okay. So my father's whole family is in Lebanon. So I'm Lebanese. And all of my cousins who are my age, when they were getting married, they had these over the top, beautiful gowns. We're talking like $50,000 couture gowns. Damn. But over there, it's rental. So they would pay what we do over here. American brides pay like to buy the dress. They would pay that to rent the dress. And it's, you know, a couture ball gown or whatever it is. So I think it's really different in the US than it is overseas. But yes, it's really common in Europe and Middle East to rent versus here. Most of them are buying it. And there are so many amazing designers now that are off the rack. You know, price points from $1,200 to $2,500, which don't get me wrong, still pricey, right? If you're thinking about a regular dress, but these are hand sewn couture, you know, or I wouldn't say couture, but like very high end dresses. And then you have the most beautiful designers in the world. They're making dresses $15,000, $25,000, $30,000. I mean, you know, they can get up there. But again, there are dresses at every price point.
What about destination weddings, since we're talking about overseas? What is your opinion on destination weddings?
Huge fan of destination weddings. I think, one, by nature of it being a travel situation, it's going to narrow down who comes. Not necessarily just because of cost, but because of who wants to make the commitment to
the effort.
And the effort. And so I love destination weddings because for a couple of reasons. One, it's not just one day, it's a weekend, right? Or it's a couple days. So it ends up being a really amazing experience because everyone's together for not just one or two days, sometimes 3 days, they really get to know each other and you can have multiple events. Also, depending on where the destination is, there can be amazing activities or just beauty of that area. If you're doing it in Mexico or, you know, Croatia or wherever, right? There's oftentimes cultural experiences that you can put on for your guests that make it really, really special and memorable.
How do you control that wedding though? I'm guessing everybody needs to have a wedding planner if they're doing a destination wedding, or at least they have to be really present at the destination or something. But how can you control actually what's going to happen if you're not there?
Yeah, control and weddings is a hard two words to go together. If you're doing a destination wedding, you're definitely going to want to have a planner and or oftentimes venues, if they are specifically destination wedding venues, like most, say 70% of their weddings are people from, you know, different destinations, they usually have things dialed in for you. But just know if you're using the venue's planner, you're going to be limited to the vet, you know, their go-to, who they work with and, you know, who they recommend. They have like their template, if you will, whereas mm-hmm. your planner is working for you, your vision, everything from scratch, right?
What kind of trends are you currently seeing? Because I'm sure like your Instagram, Pinterest is like wedding, wedding, wedding.
Trends are so interesting when it comes to weddings, because, you know, when I started the company 10 years ago, there was a very, very specific aesthetic that was very popular. It was the very light and airy photography with, you know, soft finishes and the big lush paint. It was very romantic and classic was the vibe. And then there was like a rustic vintage, like everyone using mason jars and succulents and typewriters and suitcases. That was like in the 2012s, 13s, right? And then we saw a trend, I would say a couple of years ago, where the photography turned kind of moody and dark and almost having a little bit of like an amber. Yeah, but like having like a moodier, dark, almost orange. I don't want to say orange, but like that tone on it, right? And then you saw a lot of pompous grass and you saw a lot of these like dried flowers.
Oh, I remember pompous grass.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago, right? I would say the biggest trends that we've seen as of late, mostly inspired, I would say, by TikTok, espresso martinis being huge for a signature cocktail, champagne towers, multiple dress looks. I did this at my engagement party, so call me basic, but we had little napkins that had fun facts on them about me and my fiance.
I love those little fun facts.
Yeah, but that's like a trend that I've seen, right? Yeah. I think we've moved away from the matching bridesmaids, obviously, to coordinated around a theme, a palette, a texture, a vibe, which I personally love when everyone can see and express themselves in their own way, mm-hmm. if they're in the wedding party. I think we've seen really interesting ceremony layouts where it's not just the traditional setup that you would normally see. You see like runway style ceremony setups where the couple's standing in the middle and there's like two or three rows, almost like a fashion show. So yeah, there's a lot of really fun things out there. But the thing with trends, just my advice on it is like, just don't get sucked into them, because they are very time sensitive, mm-hmm. right?
Like you don't want to look back 10 years later and be like, what was I thinking?
But if you love something, if you think something's really cool and like it resonates with you, then go for it, right? But like what I hear a lot of, you know, brides who are planning, like they want to include all the, and I want to include this trend and that trend. And, you know, and they're doing it mostly for the gram or for TikTok. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not even... Yeah.
Okay, speaking for the gram and TikTok, I think I saw this on TikTok that you can hire a team that's going to help you create content for your wedding day. I think that's brilliant. Like those little transitions with your bridesmaids. Like I would love, I mean, obviously I love social media. So I would love somebody like that for my day so I don't have to think about content.
So that is totally a thing. That is definitely a trend. I honestly don't mind it, because the last thing you want to be doing is be the person on your phone trying to capture content, especially if you're the bride. But even if you're in the wedding party, you should be there for your bestie, not necessarily mm-hmm. worried about the transition or et cetera. So yes, there are a couple service providers out there. This is what they do. Some photographers have it as an add-on service, but I have seen it more and more, especially with influencers and Gen Z getting married, they will hire someone to...
Well, I'll have a full team.
Yeah, exactly. Photo, video, there you go. But all on the iPhone, making the transitions for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the bridal party. So as I mentioned, I'm from Croatia, and at least when I was growing up there, having bridesmaids wasn't really a thing. You would have a maid of honor and that's that. But living in the US, I see that's a huge thing. And like, for example, my boyfriend is American. And if we are about to, you know, whenever we do get married, I don't even know who I would put as my bridesmaid. Like, I didn't go to college here. My childhood friends
are back home. So if something like this happens, or maybe like the girl has a million friends and the guy, you know, maybe he moved there, like how would you navigate that situation?
Yeah, wedding parties can be tricky for some people. This is a big point of stress because there's a pressure to feel like you have to have the same amount on each side, bride and groom.
Yeah,
right?
I don't have or that many sides. Friends the way he does.
Yeah, well, and that you don't need to have the same, right? Or sometimes you'll hear stories where the mother-in-law or the mother of the bride like really is lobbying for a cousin or a family member to be in it. It's a thing. It's a big point of stress. Now, here's the thing about wedding parties. The trend and what is acceptable has changed so much just in the last 10 years. Like the average age of couples getting married 10 years ago was like 27, 28. Now it's 31, 32. So what we've seen happen is as the average age of people getting married has gone up, the amount of people they're inviting as well as the wedding party goes down. Because if you get married at 22, right out of college, you're going to want like 25 of your, you know, sorority sisters in your wedding party. And that's what you used to see a lot of, right? Mm-hmm. Now I'm seeing a big trend where people have no wedding party or just one person stand beside them, which I think is really beautiful. The other thing about wedding party is you don't have to have, if you're a woman, just women on your side. You can have men and women on either side, which I really love as a trend. The number of people on each side doesn't need to be equal. So you can have 3, he can have 10, no big deal. Mm-hmm. So the rules have changed. There are no rules. Throw them out the window. What you want is people around you that are truly going to support you during this planning process, because a lot of stress that brides have oftentimes is in managing the expectations or the drama of the wedding party. And you don't need that. So
tell me more about that. What kind of drama can happen?
I mean, I would just say choose people who are low maintenance, go with the flow.
But I'm high maintenance.
Well, I mean, low maintenance as far as like, if you're in someone's wedding, you're not going to make it about you, right? You're there to support, you know what I mean? And some people will make things about them. Like,
I have to say, when I was working as a makeup artist and I was doing weddings, sometimes I would have the wedding party be more annoying than the bride.
I was going to say, I've heard that from multiple makeup artists. That's like a thing.
I'm like, it's not about you. Like, I don't need to redo your makeup the third time because you don't know how to express yourself. And because like you thought that a smoky black eyeshadow is going to look fantastic on your like light pink dress. Like, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
But yeah, that can be sometimes really annoying.
Yeah. And it comes, the stress usually comes not just on the wedding day, but if there's going to be a bridal shower or a bachelorette weekend. In fact, on our podcast, we had the batch boss, I think is what they're called. There's two girls who plan bachelorette parties for people. And part of the reason why they do it is because there's so much drama between coordination and the bride doesn't want to deal with it. And or the maid of honor is like, yo, I didn't sign up for this. So they bring in someone to help plan because it creates order to the chaos. It helps like almost create a system for voting. Where are we going to go? How much are we going to pay? What are the budgets? What are the activities? Because managing 7 or 8 different personalities of people that you know from different life stages can be really challenging. So I hear the stress around the pre-wedding stuff. And then if those bachelorettes don't do well, then the day of the wedding can be tense.
Yeah, I have been to, honestly, maybe even just one bachelorette party. Because as I said, most of my friends were getting married in Croatia around the time when I moved to the US. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even afford flying back and forth. And
yeah, let alone, that's an expensive flight.
Oh, yeah. But recently, my friend had a bachelorette in Vegas. And even though everybody was so different, we all got along great. But I'm sure there's a lot of...
What was the average age of the group?
We were a bit older.
Yeah.
I mean, 31, 2, 3, maybe some girls were a little older.
There's like a maturity factor there. And also like if you have the dollars to pay for it and you're, you know what I mean?
It was not
like,
cheap.
Yeah. Vegas can be pricey. Yeah,
a couple thousand dollars where I was like, you just have to do it. And when it comes to hair and makeup, who usually pays for the bride. Let's say if you're maid of honor, then mother of the bride, and you know, who is traditionally supposed to pay for it? Are people getting their makeup done or the bride?
So when it comes to the wedding party, first of all, if you are invited to be in the wedding party, be prepared to spend anywhere from $2,000 to $3,500, right? Because of all of those things you just said, the bachelorette, the dress, the travel, etc. But wedding makeup, which can be $150 to $300, right? If you're doing hair and makeup, etc., that is completely up to the bride and if it's in her budget. So sometimes the bride will gift it to, you know, potentially her mom and or her maid of honor. If not, it's totally fine. Bridesmaids don't need to have their makeup done. You could say, hey, I'm bringing on a makeup artist. This is her rate. She's going to be here at this time. She does hair and makeup or whatever it is. If you want to pay for it, here's the cost. It's up to you. Let me know by certain time, date, right? But, you know, you can't not pay for it and then be upset when you don't like the way someone did their own makeup. Yeah. So just keep that in mind. Don't be a bridezilla. But yeah, it's totally dependent on the bride's budget and what she's willing to do. There's really no obligation there. But if you are in the wedding party, that is something that you should kind of in the back of your mind carve out, that there will likely be a hair and makeup cost.
And the dresses, they usually pay for their own outfits? Or
yeah, more and more we're seeing the wedding party choose their dresses, which is why, again, going back to the trend of letting them pick their own dress in a color palette, in a, you know, theme or whatever it is nice because you can find a blush dress for $50 or $30. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just think as a bride, be compassionate to the wedding party, especially if you guys are younger or some of your friends don't have the income, they're in school or whatever it is. Like, you don't want them to feel obligated to have to spend a lot of money to celebrate with you. You know what I mean? Because it can make it really stressful and uncomfortable for them.
And you sometimes don't know how to communicate that you don't have money or don't want them to know that you're in some
people
kind of financial
issue. People have a lot of shame
issue.
Around that. Yeah, they don't want to share like, hey, you know, I don't have $400 for this designer bridesmaid's dress, which, you know, that's a lot of money to wear a dress one time.
The trend that I really like is having a theme for your wedding, but like a color. So everybody's wearing either black.
Like a palette. Yeah.
I've seen on TikTok a lot of like everybody's wearing black. Yeah. Just the bride and groom are maybe wearing white. But I think you mentioned before or somewhere on your page, like different colors. Maybe everybody's wearing a shade of blue or shade of green. I think that looks really beautiful.
Yeah. I've seen some really beautiful weddings where they give the wedding guests a color palette. And that way everyone comes, like you said, in a shade. So I saw a really beautiful wedding where I think the color palette was like indigos and shades of blue. So all of the wedding guests were wearing shades of blue, right? And then the couple was in all white, which was beautiful. I've seen for rehearsal dinners or engagement parties where it's like, hey, the theme is like blush, shades of pink, and everyone's wearing that. And, you know, it is really fun because you have beautiful photos and it's very editorial. But as a warning to guests, make sure you read the invitation and you look at the wedding website and you read the recommendation for attire. Because I know, especially with my guy friends who've gone to weddings, they're like, what does this mean? Like beach chic, like nudes, like what does that mean? You know, whatever the description is. And so just be kind to them. If you're going to choose a color or a theme, make it something that is like accessible and not specific.
Drop a few photos so people can get inspired.
Put a mood board. For sure.
Put a mood board and make it very clear on your invitations because not everybody reads the invitations.
Oh, people don't read them. So make sure not only do you have it on the invitation, but then when you send out, you like your reminder messages to guests, like, hey, excited to see you next weekend. Remember the color palette
or the color I told you.
Exactly.
What if somebody shows up wearing white?
Oh man. That is a rough one.
Who's supposed to tell them? Who's supposed to throw a glass of wine on them?
I know. I think there's a video that we posted on Loverly that Alexandra Madison. Yeah, she's so funny. So her and John were on the podcast, her and her husband. They're like these hysterical TikTokers. And they do a whole like video on this. And it's got like hundreds of thousands of views. I mean, look, I'm just going to say you're an adult. You know, at this point, don't wear white to a wedding unless it literally says, please wear white. Number two, don't wear something that's even like similar. If it's like a silver sequins or like a creamy beige, that's very, very like.
Yeah. Champagne.
Champagne, almost like borderline white or cream. Just avoid it. There's so many beautiful options out there. Just don't do it. And if you do do it, karma is coming for you. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Maybe the wedding planner goes and gives them a men's coat to put on.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. It's a tough one.
I would definitely have like 5 black outfits on the side for somebody to like change into but you know what? I don't think anybody does it on purpose though. I mean, maybe they kind of just like don't see the way the dress looks, maybe at nighttime or something. I don't know. Have you seen that? Is that like a common theme?
I mean, sometimes? The thing that I've heard, honestly, when it comes to the wearing white is usually not a wedding guest. It's honestly like some level of drama between like the mother-in-law, the mother of the bride, the father of the bride. It's always like the family members. I don't know why.
The toxic family vibes.
Yeah. Or maybe it's the toxic cousin or I don't know.
Yeah, the cousin that was always jealous of you. And
or the sister-in-law that is a nightmare. I don't know. Please don't do it is all I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, maybe even in the invite, you can say like, don't wear white to my wedding day. But speaking of invites, I've seen a lot. So like I've seen either people like send a paper invite. What I've seen on TikTok, that people make like a little video, like an editorial video, and then they send you like an email invite. So can you walk us through different types of invites?
Yeah, invitations really set the tone for your wedding day and your wedding event. So if you are having a more laid back, relaxed backyard wedding, right? Like you might not need to have a crazy formal invitation, right? So it's totally up to you. And this is something where, again, invitations can happen at any price point. You can have a single paper that is just regular printed and shipped. You could have a thick cardstock, calligraphy with wax seals and belly bands and
pigeons
and liners and dried flowers. I mean, you can go, I mean, people can spend up to like, I've seen people spend like $20 on in one invitation. And then the to mail it is like $3. So it can scale very, very quickly, but you also can do something very, very simple and cost effective. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who just are doing like, if it's a kind of casual, less formal wedding, more like a dinner party or reception, they might just send a digital one, a paperless one. So like for my baby shower, right, it was a quick turnaround. It was within like 30 days. I just sent a digital one. And it was great because all the information was there. People were able to RSVP quickly. But if you're doing like a destination wedding or, you know, a lot of people spend 18 to 24 months planning their wedding, you can send a save the date to let people know right away. Then you can send the formal invitation to follow. And inside that invitation, you can have a QR code that goes to your wedding website. You can, you know, have different paper installs for directions or your registry or, you know, what's happening for the rehearsal dinner. So they can be as minimal or as full blown as you need. One thing I will say, if anyone is currently planning a wedding and thinking about wedding stationery, Loverly has a deal with one of the biggest wedding stationery companies where you can get up to 25% off your invitation. So it's for anyone who has a free account on Loverly. In your dashboard, we have a promo code with Minted. So
amazing.
And, you know, that can save you 25% just right there.
You mentioned wedding registry. What do you see now, again, trends or whatever's current? What's most common? So where I come from, people usually just give cash and envelope.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I told my boyfriend about that, he's like, yo, that's so weird.
Yeah.
Again, American.
Yeah, no, it's a difference between American, Europe, same thing, Middle Eastern culture, very common to give cash. In fact, like that is the number one gift
that's,
people
give. That's the preferred.
Yeah. And it has, I would say, even as like 15 years ago, giving cash, I think, was like a faux pas. People like didn't like getting cash. It was very proper. You register for China, bedding, toasters, all of that. Again, because couples are getting married a little bit later, oftentimes they already live together. What we're seeing as a trend for registry is that people are using the registry as their upgrade and splurge moment. So upgrading their dinnerware, their barware to have crystal and to have beautiful glassware, right? Maybe updating their bedding and their sheets to be that really luxe organic Turkish cotton set, right? So we're seeing people, I would say, splurge or add more high price point upgrade items on their registry. And we're seeing them register not just for physical things, but experiences, dinners, classes, date nights, honeymoon activities. And then, yes, you cannot avoid it. The cash registry is here. It's here to stay. I think it's like something like 50 to 60% of all registries have some level of cash contribution. And if you don't, people will still bring, you know, checks or cash. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, if you think that that's going to be a thing, I've seen at weddings, there's like these beautiful like gift boxes that literally it's almost like a little mailbox where you insert like the envelope. And when I first saw it like 4 years ago, I was like, is that like tacky that you literally have like a box for the cash? Like put my cash in here. But it's actually really smart because you don't want those envelopes floating around.
Yeah.
And I've heard nightmare stories where envelopes go missing.
Floated somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, as we are wrapping up this conversation, as somebody's wrapping up the wedding, what are they usually gifting? So I personally, when I'm attending weddings and when I get a gift that's kind of like meaningful, but not meaningful, when I get a gift that's like useful, I like that more than getting like a magnet. So what do you suggest if somebody is like getting married, they're trying to figure out like their farewell?
Look, I think favors and gifts are nice if you have room for it in your budget, but it also can be really expensive and not necessary if you are cutting down on budget. Now, what I prefer, and I agree with you, is something that's useful. I don't think doing the monogrammed, like, no one wants like a coaster that says like Coco and Kelly's wedding 2023. Nobody wants that. Like, let's be honest. No, nobody wants that. So don't, just avoid the super cheese, like throwaway, like, you know, garbage. I personally like an edible favor or gift. Because like, whether it's like a honey or, you know,
I love that
a cookie to go.
My first thought was like a weed edible.
People have done that too. But I think something that people can, a consumable, I would say, that people can enjoy.
Consumable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think those are nice.
You can get like a little monogram, like a personalized chocolate. I'm not going to put like a coaster with your name on in my apartment. Yeah, like,
exactly.
I'm going to put mine.
Exactly. I'm aligned on that one.
Kelly, I had so much fun talking to you. I'm pretty sure this conversation is going to be very useful for anybody getting married, about to get married, maybe divorced and getting married again. So thank you for sharing all of your tips and tricks. And please tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find Loverly.
Well, if anyone has any wedding planning questions, if you're in the process of planning, send a DM, follow our account at Loverly on Instagram and TikTok. We are always down to answer questions, and you can find us at loverly.com. And amazing. We'd love to help you plan your big day. And it's for free $99, no fee to join.
Woohoo! Love it. Well, Kelly, thanks again. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.